All right, we are in TypeScript world again today, but more importantly, we're with Anders and Steve Lucco and Luke. So let me ask you a question now. Last time we talked, we were all of us in Denmark, and you guys had announced TypeScript. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot of excitement, and people had already started hacking with it. What's been happening with TypeScript since then?
Well, so we went public in October, I think, of 2012, last year. Mm-hmm. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been like 9 months now, and we've seen a whole community grow up around TypeScript that we're super excited about. It's been a lot of fun for us to learn about open source, which is something that we hadn't really done before. Or yeah. Well, Luke did a little bit, I think, with F-Sharp, right? But but I certainly hadn't, and I think Steve had either. It's been a fantastic experience, and it's been very rewarding to see all the you know adoption that we've gotten, even though we're not yet at a 1.0. But also all the feedback that the community has given us on the work that we've done and where to go next with it. And so shortly we will be announcing TypeScript 0.9.
Great.
Which is the next one in the next stepping stone towards 1.0.
Okay.
And
excellent.
So we'll talk about that too.
In terms of like how people have been actually using it in the real world, have you guys discovered like interesting, maybe, and I wouldn't say design flaws, but things maybe you didn't consider, like, wow, that's actually a great idea, maybe we should implement it that way, or how are people actually using it?
Well, we've been amazed at how engaged people have been, and in particular, there's been sites out there that people have, one's called Definitely Typed, where people have used TypeScript to take existing JavaScript libraries and write down an interface for them, so it might be easier for someone to, with a tool, to go and understand what that library does, get some member completion and other types of help. And these are third parties who've just come, and members of the community, and then we can learn from that, because someone will take one of these libraries, you know, for example, say Backbone, and do a typing of it. And then we can see, well, how are people thinking about the library? And when it's expressed in an actual language like TypeScript, we get very detailed feedback from the community. So actually, at this point, community participation is one of the key ways that we're learning how to evolve the language.
Awesome. Yeah.
Excellent. I think, you know, along those lines, obviously so library typings and a lot of the users of these library typings have been one of these big pieces of feedback in the process, and those have taught us where we had this goal with TypeScript to really be able to describe JavaScript APIs as they are today. That you wouldn't have to sort of define things differently to use TypeScript, that whatever you were doing with JavaScript, TypeScript could capture that in the type system and allow you to tool that. And these library typings were a way to sort of learn about, if you're going to take an existing library and type it, what are the places where TypeScript still feels like there's a little piece of the API that you can't quite describe in the way you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And we really got a lot of that feedback, right? You know, from day one when we put it out there, we started sort of hearing some of these places where some patterns people were trying to express that we hadn't experienced ourselves internally. Mm-hmm. We saw some of the places where there were opportunities to make that a bit richer. And so a lot of the work we've actually done in 0.9 has been focused around how do we fill in a few of those holes to make it so you can really express the full typing of the JavaScript libraries.
Awesome.
I think, you know, one of the biggest one, that it's no surprise, is a request for generics. And we kind of knew that already. I mean, even as we put out 0.8, we knew that without generics, you can only go so far in accurately describing typing patterns. Certainly over, in particular over certain libraries like underscore or knockout or the promises pattern that's very common in JavaScript. Those are almost classic examples of where you want genericity. You know, you want a type that is parameterized by something, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like a promise of T, where the T is either a number or a string or whatever it is, right?
Okay.
And if you can't say that, then the minute you cross that boundary, then you just sort of, that type evaporates. And you're kind of back, it's almost like the good old .NET 1.0 days with array list versus list of T, right? Mm. Where with array list you could have your convenience methods and whatever, but you couldn't have your type.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because, I mean, JavaScript seems to be a somewhat generic language in some sense, right? It's typeless, or it doesn't have types, etc., blah, blah, blah. You can have an array of whatever.
Right.
So JavaScript programmers are essentially, whether they realize it or not, programming in a generic way already. So what is sort of the, like, when you attach your world of generics onto this kind of strange world of generics, what's the work that had to be done? What was the complexity? How did you do it?
Well, so JavaScript is dynamic, right? So,
of course.
So the types are not there, but there are certain programming patterns that are common in JavaScript, like, and in particular functional programming patterns. And functional programming patterns tend to be higher ordered, you know, with respect to types. You know, it's like functions that operate on sequences of things. And in order to accurately, or even inaccurately, describe those patterns, you need parametric types. You need to be able to carry through the type argument of for this sequence, for example.
And that would include even you know, things that are built right into ECMAScript 5. So
right.
Some of the things that happened in ECMAScript 5 was that Array got a bunch more prototype members that do basically collection operations over an array. And so if you want to write down what's going on there, even right in the built-in JavaScript library, you need generics to describe it, because it's an array of something. You know, so if I go to the trouble of making a class to express, you know, my shape, like it's a rectangle or a square, I can then say, well, it's an array of squares, or, you know, an array of circles, and I can then carry that type through, because you may be in the typed world in TypeScript, and you're getting a lot of tooling benefit from it, but then you go to, say, jQuery or something, and you get a collection back, and that collection potentially is a collection of something very interesting, like jQuery elements or something, but you don't know what it's a collection of, and so then all that fun typing goes away, and you get less information flow to get your work done. Mm. And so it's right in the very built-in libraries of JavaScript, even, that are having these generic patterns that Anders is describing.
Well, it was even egregious enough, I mean, in 08, that we had to actually sort of build in poor man's generics in the compiler, and special case array of T, you know, or T bracket bracket SS, because, you know, if you couldn't even express that, then it would be a very painful world indeed. But now we've basically extended that capability to all types, not just that one magically blessed type.
You were kind of talking about how do you fit generics and typing in general onto JavaScript. I think one of the general things we've seen is, even though JavaScript is dynamically typed, when API designers design their APIs, or when developers design for their application code design, that the shapes of how different components of the system are going to talk to each other, there is typically something like a type system that they have in mind in their head about how that code is structured, what the contracts are about how those things talk to one another. Mm. And you see that through documentation, through doc comments that people use. Inevitably, there's some way of describing what are the contracts about these things. And frequently, that documentation, those contracts, do end up evolving things like generics, which allow them to describe the sort of dependence, like the element type of the array over as the input is going to be the same as the element type of the array on the output, right? The documentation will say something like that. Mm. And so they very much have this notion of generics that's part of the design of the API. It's part of the way they've thought about that API design. Mm-hmm. They just didn't have, sort of, in JavaScript itself, you didn't have to write that down, and so you didn't have a specific notion of generics. But as soon as you want to put a type system on top of that, you really have to be able to express that relationship, because it was part of what the API designer had in mind originally.
Interesting. So what does cup of tea look like? When you
actually
generate JavaScript.
So the funny thing is, when we generate it, then all the types, of course, evaporate.
Oh, they're gone,
so,
of course.
So, and that was already the case.
Sure.
But the syntax for it looks quite similar, I would say, to Java or C Sharp, for that matter. You know, you can put type arguments on classes, interfaces, and methods. Mm. We support constraints on type arguments. Perhaps the thing that's interesting about generics in TypeScript versus other languages is that TypeScript has a structural type system. And we've actually gone completely to structural. We have sort of some nominal aspects of the type system in 0.8, you know, classes, the way they've inherited from each other.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, it's purely a structural type system. And doing genericity over structural type systems is something that that has exploded the brains of many a researcher over the years. And we've definitely also strayed into some uncharted territory where we even had to have some deep talks with some folks from MSR that have written papers on this stuff. It's been quite a little learning process, but it's really cool because you can write, you know, generic types, let's say like a pair type, pair of T, U that has two fields of type T and U.
Okay.
But then you could also just write an object literal with two fields that have the right names and the right types, and that is now a pair of T, U for those types. So you don't have to nominally indicate that I'm making an instance of pair or whatever. It just, if it fits, you know, it is of the right type. But doing that for generics, and we get into recursive generic expansions and whatever, you know, becomes non-trivial. So that's been where a lot of our thinking has taken place. Yeah.
So and a lot of the effort has been to take something that is pretty theoretically challenging and make all the pragmatic choices so that it's easy to use for developers.
Yes.
You know, so we've worked really hard to craft the rules so that you don't have to think too much about all the recursion and how the structural comparison actually takes place, but you'll just get very very natural results. And like a good example that I think Luke can describe for you is we were comparing two different promises libraries for you know, doing asynchronous interaction with Windows 8 and we found actually that the two very different types actually could unify, and you could continue to flow the types through, even though people were using two different frameworks to express the promises. And that's something that would just never happen in the nominally typed, you know, Java C# case,
mm-hmm.
but here it's happening in this new structurally typed generics. And that is evidence that we've kept the rules simple enough that the right kind of good surprises happen, where if the things do actually match in structure, you're going to get the benefit and you're going to get the types to keep flowing.
Well, one of the things I think may have been sort of implicit in some of what we were just talking about is, if you look at in practice what the real benefit ends up being for generics, the biggest part of it is that even if you don't use generics yourself, because you're using things like arrays, which happen to be generic behind the scenes, and you might be calling someone else's library where they wrote it as having a generic parameter on it, you're going to get a lot more tooling. So your IntelliSense is going to be a lot richer. You're going to hit dot and you're going to see the correct completion list because that information flowed through a whole bunch of different pieces of the code.
Mm.
And you're also going to get errors, because when you get something passed in and you try to use it in the wrong way, you're going to find out about that because we were able to track that information. And so one of the things we found that's really the most exciting about all of this is that we can now take code with no additional type annotations on it, and because the libraries that it's using happen to be using generics, we suddenly start finding errors in code that had bugs in it, just because without any type annotations, but we were able to flow all that information through. And so overall, the sort of tooling benefits, the catching errors, the getting IntelliSense, the being able to go to definition, all those kind of things. It's a really nice thing, and generics sort of is this thing that even if you're not actively using it, you don't want to write out all these complicated generic things yourself. You get a lot of benefit from it.
We could do a little whiteboard.
That's
just what I illustrate. One example where it helps, right?
Got Anders on the whiteboard.
So say you have like an array of strings, for example, var a equals say hello world. Da da da. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say you want like the lengths of each element. You know, you could actually, there's a method on array, at least in ECMAScript 5, called map, where you could say a dot map of s arrow s dot length, for example. Here I'm using also lambdas, which is a thing that we support and that ECMAScript 6 will support. But basically, I'm saying map all of my elements of the array over this function. and give me the length of each string, right?
Okay.
Now, if you were to do that with TypeScript 0.8, you'd get in here, and then by the time you say S dot, we would show you nothing. Because we wouldn't know what the element type is. Now, all of a sudden, you'll see here statement completion that shows you everything, including the length property, because we can map the type, which we actually here inferred. You'd know, I never set any types here, by the way. But we can infer that this is a string array, or which is the same as array of string, right? And the map function takes, so the map function takes a T from array of T, where T is string, and therefore we can know that S is of type string, and therefore we can know that this in turn, length returns a number, and therefore the result of this is a number array, and therefore N becomes array of number. Without you having to write any of this stuff at all, it just flows. And that's one example of where generics are really useful, without you actually having to use them yourself.
Sure.
Someone used them in writing the library typing for these things, right? But you don't. You just see the benefits.
Absolutely. I mean, in general, isn't that the case with genericity and generic programming? It is really library developers that are taking advantage of it. Certainly that's the case in the native world with templates and blah, blah, blah. So, very, very interesting. The other thing is, this is compile time genericity, unlike C#, which is runtime.
Well, C#,
right?
is both. I mean, okay. C# has what's known as reified generics, which means that generic types exist both at compile time and at runtime. Java has erased generics, and this is more like that.
Okay.
We basically erase all genericity. In fact, we erase all types. Java only erases the genericity, but keeps other types, and that in and of itself causes some other problems, you know. Mm. But in this system here, we sort of have both generics and strong typing, and then all of it erases, and you're just running dynamically typed code.
Okay. Now, in the case you mentioned the latest version of the JavaScript standard, they have typed arrays.
Yep.
Which is what they use in ASM.js.
That's right.
And so what happens when I do want a type coming out of the other side from your world? I mean, because you don't erase all types if it's a typed array already, right?
Well typed arrays are, they are obviously typed. The element types of a typed array are sort of homogeneous across that array, which is the sort of thing that makes them unique.
Okay.
They work at a much sort of lower level of the system, right? Mm-hmm. So they're a much more sort of... I want to program at the bits and bytes level construct, and that's very valuable. We've got them in IE10. They were something that's very important generally to have in the JavaScript runtime.
Mm.
But they are sort of at a different level than where TypeScript is working. I think the none of the generic stuff necessarily applies to them because typed arrays are actually they're written out. There's a specific UINT8 array and an INT32 array and a FLOAT32 array, and these are all separate sort of types. So we're kind of working at a different level in terms of how generics work. It might be in the future there's some extensions to how typed arrays could be expressed where you could sort of describe your own typed arrays.
Mm.
And you could imagine that there's a place where generics would help you to express those typings in the future. But that's more speculative.
Like Luke mentioned, we've done a lot of work implementing typed arrays. And it is right now at a lower level of the system.
Okay.
But I think it illustrates... a principle of TypeScript is bet on JavaScript. And here you're seeing in both typed arrays and asm.js great evidence that the JavaScript community as a whole is finding ways to create fantastic performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so by being a sugar over JavaScript that erases entirely to JavaScript, TypeScript is betting on all that energy in the JavaScript community to solve performance problems and to broaden the class of applications that can run in the web platform, right? So, so we think that it's very important to be watching those developments and to make sure that the Chakra engine is second to none in implementing those things. But the way TypeScript relates to it is just this general thing that we're betting on JavaScript. We're betting that JavaScript will make any application that you want to write, writable for the web platform.
Understood. That which is, you know, a great conversation in and of itself where we could spin endlessly. Because I think it's really interesting. Google's latest Google I.O., our friend Lars Bach and company, were doing a talk there. And they were talking about the fact that JavaScript probably can't get any faster, at least by an order of two, right? Like twice as fast in N years. And so that it could be that the language has actually reached its like speed potential without unbelievable amounts of rocket science engineering. I don't really, so I'm not really, I mean,
well,
what do you think about the fact that, because you're making a bet on JavaScript.
Well, I think, you know, the danger with making a statement like that is that that could very well be true for some piece of code, but look at sort of what's happening with WebGL and support for hardware acceleration in rendering libraries and whatever, where you're seeing like not just a factor of two, but factors of 10 or 100, you know, in increased speed. And ultimately for the user, what is it that you're measuring? What is the 2x of what, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, if you're trying to write a compute engine in JavaScript, but that's probably not what people are going to do with JavaScript, or maybe that's only part of the equation, right? I mean, and so, but then you see stuff like asm.js, where all of a sudden, I mean, you can get like way more than 2x performance for certain kinds of code, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's, so I think it's very dangerous to generalize here, because we've seen over and over that the community finds ways to exploit, you know, verticals as opposed to like 2x across everything, right?
Sure. Fair enough.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I shouldn't speak on behalf of Lars and company. That was me generalizing.
Sure, sure, sure.
He's a little bit smarter than I am. But I think that was mainly the point, though, right? So that's an excellent answer.
Well, Lars actually makes one point that I'm going to disagree with.
Okay.
Specifically, so hi, Lars. So last time we talked back in Denmark in the fall, Lars was and his team were kind of saying that they'd seen that you couldn't get stable object-oriented performance with JavaScript because you need to do a lot of heuristics to figure out what the best way of, for example, handling an object property access is, because of it may be polymorphic, meaning that there may be different types of objects that flow through the same code site and then want to access the same property, say named X.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when you see O.X, it might be that O has one hidden type or another hidden type. But what we found in our own investigations of that is that over time we've been able to stabilize that quite a bit. And so what we're seeing now with our current work, which will be coming out, you know, with future updates of Windows, for example, is that compared to, say, where we were with IE10, we found that there are techniques where you can greatly stabilize the performance even of big object-oriented programming. So we're finding that there's both approaches for things like computational kernels, like a physics engine, like asm.js is an excellent one.
Mm-hmm.
Using the GPU, as Anders mentioned, is an excellent one. But then also for this broader thing of you've written a few hundred thousand lines of object-oriented code, we're finding more and more that there are ways of stabilizing that even on the JavaScript platform.
Excellent. Excellent. So now we know we can wander back to the wonderful world of TypeScript 09. So is there more you want to kind of dig into around generics, or shall we go into the other things?
Well, it's actually interesting. I mean, generics was by far the most highly voted for thing. It was the feature that we knew, as Andrew mentioned, we knew even before we put out 08 that we wanted to go and do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually a ton of additional things that we've been doing in 0.9. It's really the first sort of major. We've done a bunch of minor releases since the 08 release that have added a number of incremental new sort of stability features and things in the tool chain, for instance. But 09 is our first big change to the language, really, to address some of the sort of underlying things that we've gotten feedback on. And I think there's two general themes of that. One that we haven't actually talked about yet is really we've done a lot of work actually rewriting a lot of the core compiler and the tool chain to be able to make sure that it can scale up to really large code bases. Like we had this sort of thing when we were going out that TypeScript was all about large-scale application development using JavaScript. And, you know, we designed a lot of the system around that. And one of the things we knew when we put out the preview was that, you know, our tools, our, you know, sort of the Visual Studio tools we had, some of the other tools that we made available, like the Playground, that when they scaled up to sort of a few hundred thousand lines of code, that there was some slowness that started to creep in. There was some work we were going to need to do to improve that. Mm-hmm. But we thought it was going to take some time for us to run into code bases that were that scale of code in TypeScript, because, you know, it takes a while to write 300,000 lines of JavaScript code. But what we didn't really bet on at the time was that it turns out it's really easy, and it was sort of intentional, it's really easy to bring JavaScript code into TypeScript. Mm. And so we saw a lot of groups, some groups inside Microsoft, some teams outside of Microsoft, bringing a lot of code into TypeScript sort of overnight and suddenly having a multi-hundred thousand line code base. And so we saw that some of the tooling scenarios we had weren't keeping up with that. Mm-hmm. So we made the investment as part of 0.9 to really improve the fundamentals of our compiler to be able to scale up to address that. Which is exciting that, you know, we have these huge bodies of code now leveraging TypeScript. Mm-hmm. I think the one team internally, the TFS team, who builds sort of all the TFS web portal that lets you get an experience over your Team Foundation server through a web browser, they did a blog post actually a while back about their experience moving their development experience over to TypeScript. And they have over 100,000 lines of code, a very large project, a big team working on that. Mm. And they were actually able to move over to that, and they've been finding a lot of interesting issues in their existing code base because of having the type system and having the additional tools.
So speaking about the compiler, in some sense, one of the things that generic systems can do is increase the amount of compile time, right? We see that definitely in other languages.
Yeah.
So you must have focused a lot of time on performance in that aspect. So can you address that?
Well, so we have, I mean, the good news is we have a lot of experience with with writing compilers that implement generics. And Joe Paymer, who's the developer lead on our compiler, has worked on F#, and, you know, so he's no stranger to generics. And the folks working on our language service actually worked on Roslyn as well, the C# and BB language services.
Cool.
And, you know, there are many lessons in there. I mean, but I would maybe call out two. One is incremental parsing. You know, that where often you can realize with some smarts that you don't have to reparse the entire file. You can just reparse a little piece of it.
Okay.
And the other is what I think they call like a pull model type checker, which we have in place now. Which is really, it's all about being lazy. It's like, don't do now what you could possibly do later, or maybe never, if no one ever asks, right? And when it comes down to generics and creating expansions of generics and whatever, you always, as a rule, want to defer. Defer, defer, defer. Don't do it unless you absolutely have to. Because otherwise, especially with a structural type system and generics, you could instantaneously explode in an expansion of types. So you just want to defer. And that's basically a big part of the work that's gone into the compiler is creating a system that allows us to do that intelligently.
Cool.
Yeah.
So the impact that you'll see with 0.9 is that you'll be able to load up large code bases and get very rapid, feels like instant response time to many of your tooling queries. Like, say, if you hover over something and you want to get a type, kind of quick info, or if you hit dot and you want to get some completions, the response time is now excellent across even very large code bases. And so we felt like we needed to accomplish that as part of this release, because we saw that the teams were building quite big code bases, and it's a core part of the value proposition of TypeScript is that you get this rich tooling. And tooling is no good without response time. It has to be instant. You know, you have
sure.
to you have to be able to just count on it and get this feeling like I'm always going to be able to get that information flow.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the key pieces of progress that's happened in the 0.9.
Well, one of the really nice things actually is that all of this investment in having tools be able to scale up to really large code bases has actually been in the core compiler itself. It's been sort of a reworking of how type checking works inside the compiler. And as we probably talked about in the discussion we had several months back,
mm-hmm.
the core compiler is all open source. It's all on CodePlex. And we actually have a sort of compiler API there available for language services to build on top of. And so We have a team that builds some Visual Studio support on top of that, and so we can get all these scaling benefits for that Visual Studio support. But that's also available to anyone else building tools. And one of the things we've really been excited about is the number of groups who have gone out and done tools integration for TypeScript into other IDEs and other tools. And so we've seen that showing up in WebStorm and in several other popular IDEs. And all of this work we're doing on sort of enabling performance should be things that any of these other tools could also leverage.
Yeah.
Cool. So generally, we hope that this investment is going to really pay off for teams as they grow their code bases.
I'm sure, which is like you said, that was the original promise of the technology, yeah. Was to make it huge code bases actually understandable and, you know, compartmentalized and modular, blah, 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 all that
yep.
good stuff.
Absolutely.
One question I'll have, though, is like whenever you compile to JavaScript, or to another language, or to any target, you want it to be optimized output. So, are you guys constantly revving sort of how optimized the JavaScript is that you output from a large TypeScript program? So I know
so
it's idiomatic.
I think that's important to realize. First of all, is that TypeScript is a It's a very shallow. Superset of JavaScript.
Understood.
It's not like for example, certain cross compilers to JavaScript try to implement another language semantics in JavaScript,
like the Google Web Tool,
for example,
okay.
or ScriptSharp,
or
whatever, you know. Yeah, and so doing that requires that you also include a runtime library and turn things that look cheap in this language into expensive calls over here, do you know
okay.
what I mean? And,
yeah.
and scrambled names and what have you. And when you look at the output of our compiler, often you can't, other than the large-scale structuring constructs, like the way we turn classes into function closures and modules into function closures and whatever, but the actual method bodies are exactly the same. Because there isn't anything different. And so in that sense, really the optimizations we do is that we emit the right idioms or the industry accepted idioms for doing prototype inheritance and for doing private variables by hiding them in function closures and so forth. And yes, that stuff we do. But the rest of it is just your code. And it'll do what it'll do. Do you know what
I
mean?
Understand, but
yeah.
I guess I got sort of sidetracked on the notion of generics.
Sure, but recall generics are really, think of them this way. Generics are a vehicle for statically trafficking type information for error checking and tooling purposes.
Okay.
But at runtime, it just goes poof. It's not there. It's not there at all. You know. JavaScript already has a dynamic type system that tracks all of that in the objects that are created, and that doesn't change at all.
Mm.
Really, what generics are a vehicle for us to better statically model what's going to happen at runtime, more accurately model.
Okay.
You know, that's really what they are. Yeah.
So I think that's the basic answer to the question, and I'll just add that we think hard all the time about performance
in the
TypeScript team, and we look for opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps that we also are running a project to build a world-class JavaScript engine that's super fast. And so that gives us opportunities to understand where we would get performance. And a simple example is enums. So giving people the opportunity to emit enums either as... you can say, like, say you had an enum color, you could emit color.red, but we can also give you the option to emit the number literal, say 0, that would be color.red.
Mm-hmm.
And because in fact it turns out that there's a set of optimizations the engine can do if it knows the actual set of literal numbers in a switch statement. You know, so there's little things like that we look for.
Mm-hmm.
There's also things that have to do with for example, the way that object members are initialized in constructors, the order of that actually matters to both Chrome and IE and Firefox also. So there are little subtle things involving understanding how to put together constructors, mm-hmm. understanding how to emit constants rather than object references where possible. That do help, you know, for example, the that enum optimization, when we do it on the TypeScript compiler, makes it run 15% faster in batch mode. So there can be significant impacts of doing these little targeted optimizations. So we're trying to deliver the value proposition that if you use TypeScript, it will be emitting code that will work very well in the modern JavaScript engines.
Excellent. So now that we've reached random time, but we will get back into it, because I think this is an important question. I mean, in some sense, when you think about like parallelism, right, and asynchrony, the beautiful thing that you guys did in C Sharp is having an unintentional side effect of now everyone else wants it.
Yeah.
So the question I would ask
is actually one of our more requested features.
Generics was number one. Number two is to bring the C Sharp style async await.
And you know, strangely, we've already had people modify the TypeScript compiler with async implementations.
Really?
That you know, just for fun in their spare time.
Awesome.
Now, and we do indeed think deeply about how to include that. I think I can with certainty say it's not going to be in 1.0. It may be in a future release. One thing that it might hinge on is whether ECMAScript 6 gets generators or iterators, because if they're present, then the kind of code you can generate is actually not, it doesn't come out looking like a spaghetti hairball. If you have to rewrite sequential code into a state machine without the aid of a feature like iterators, then your code, for all practical purposes, becomes unrecognizable. You know, and we've sort of had a mantra in the TypeScript team that we don't want to mangle your code. We want to generate beautiful code that's immediately recognizable, because it sort of makes you trust the system. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That you understand what comes out the other end.
Sure.
And this is one of those that. And I think for the same reason that I believe is why CoffeeScript hasn't taken the pull request for Iced CoffeeScript. Is that right? Yeah, that it just basically, you know, your code just becomes unreadable.
Fair enough. That makes sense.
But I think there is, you know, I think this is something that we're generally interested in, both in TypeScript but also in the standards world with ECMAScript and with future JavaScript is things to improve programming against asynchrony. And I think there's a few things you want, and I just mentioned generators, which is actually planned for ECMAScript 6.
Cool.
There's been a lot of work going on with that in the spec recently. And that gives a big part of the foundational, it gives you basically the runtime system, a way of doing these state machines that you need to do to do something like async await. Once that's in runtimes, then it's just a matter of some sugar, or some syntactic sugar to provide an async-specific feature. And that's something we could really easily do as a sugar in TypeScript on top of that kind of feature.
Cool.
But I think we're working at the level of the standards body on, you know, getting generators done, getting that spec finished up for ECMAScript 6. And I think for TypeScript, that's something we definitely want to layer on top.
Cool. Because, I mean, one of the cool things about TypeScript is that you can sort of vet ideas for future iterations of JavaScript.
Actually, along those lines, you know, it's one of the great things has been actually bringing some of the experience we've gotten with TypeScript, because TypeScript implements a handful of ECMAScript 6 features like classes and arrow functions, and we've been able to take some of that feedback we've gotten from users who've been using that in these very large projects and actually take that into the standards body as feedback on the features that are being discussed for ECMAScript 6 standard. And we're able to get that feedback earlier than we would if we had to go and implement that directly into, you know, an engine, because people can't write a ton of code against an engine if it's not going to be able to run on the broad web. But they can write a ton of code against TypeScript, compile it down, and then use that. And so we've been able to get a lot more actual user experience with some of these features because of being able to do it within the context of TypeScript. And actually, interestingly, just a few months ago, one of the features that TypeScript classes have that JavaScript ECMAScript 6 classes didn't have was the ability to have static methods. And that was something that I think we didn't even originally have in TypeScript, but we got a lot of feedback from teams internally who had been using it that was something they wanted to be able to write. There was a lot of patterns they were writing where that felt natural. And that feature actually has now been added into the ECMAScript 6 spec, so something that we sort of got some experience with in TypeScript. We're now seeing that showing up also in the ECMAScript 6 spec with the same syntax that we were using. So,
interesting.
So that's kind of cool that we're able to get that feedback loop going between TypeScript and the standards body.
Perfect. So what happens when the standard catches up to TypeScript? In other words, I mean, what happens when...
One thing the standard will never do is, the standard will never have static typing or optional static typing as we have in TypeScript.
Sure.
And if you if you look at what that, and that is the main driver, I would say, of and the main reason for doing TypeScript is that there's all this IDE power that becomes possible and tooling power that becomes possible if you have a static type system to inform you about what's happening in the code.
Sure.
But I think that the committee has been pretty clear that ECMAScript is going to stay purely a dynamic language.
Excellent. Now listen, Andres, real quickly, there's a lot of people on Channel 9 have been asking what you've been up to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does Andres still work on C#?
Oh, yeah.
Is the language going to evolve? I mean, can you just tell people what's going on? Like,
I'm splitting my time, I'd say 50-50 on the two projects. It's been sloshing back and forth, you know. I mean, right now we've been in a busy time with TypeScript, but you know, we're moving towards 1.0, and then that's going to probably cool down a little. We're still actively doing C# language design meetings and whatever. I can't talk about any of it right now, but
sure.
Finishing up the Roslyn project, I'm actively involved in that too. Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Steve, why can't JavaScript support SIMD instructions?
Great question. A similar thing is actually something we've been talking about, which is to work with the standards committee to add some sort of interface to the GPU to what you can do in JavaScript. Because, again, say a C program might be 2-3 times faster than JavaScript, depending on what we can do with asm.js and so on. But the GPU is 10 to 100 times faster, so if I want to multiply a couple matrices, it may well make sense to do that by somehow interfacing with the SIMD world that is actually getting faster than the CPU world. So we're in active conversations both internally and with the industry, trying to think about what could we do to standardize that kind of thing, then to take your two huge matrices and multiple them on the GPU while it's not busy rendering stuff.
Right.
So yeah, that's a great question because you've put your finger on something we're actually looking at.
Right on. So hey, always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
Luke Hoban, by the way, I didn't say your last name,
yeah.
Forgive me, because we were just joking about Luke Skywalker, so I got sort of confused. But always great to talk to you guys. I hope to come and talk to you again soon. And hopefully we'll see you at Build. We'll do this live.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Thanks a lot, Charles.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Yeah.